Jim Mooney. First time I saw him, after I got out of service in 46, I was in Kingsport, Holbrum was managing, coaching first base, I was on first base. He said, "You watch this guy, this Mooney, God, what a move." Said he picked off three Giants in one ball game, so he's got the record. Well, I'm not far off. About that time he raised that leg, and where his deception comes in, he does move his head. In other words, most of these base runners stealing bases, they watching that guy's head.
Yeah.
As soon as that head comes over, they go back. But Mooney held the head straight away, moved his foot 45 degrees toward first base, and threw with his eyes staring straight ahead. And if they'd ever perfect that, I've often wondered why that they never tried to perfect that. Why does he have to move his head to throw to first base? Why can't he come down and get so quick like that, looking that way, and still have the same stuff as moving his head? Now, can you figure that out?
No, I can't figure it out.
It'd be hard to learn, but Jim Mooney learned it.
He knows where first base is.
He knows where first base is. And it's...
But did he pick you off?
No, he didn't. Well, I wasn't off. Old Brumman says, "See what I mean? See what I mean?" And he's one of those guys, get your lead, don't get picked off. And I wasn't very far off, and I saw it just in time. I said, "Hell, I thought he's going home." I didn't see that. I was watching his head. He didn't pick me off, but I know I watched him from then on.
So you were playing semi-pro ball after?
Yeah, after I ended then. So this Jack.
What kind of work were you doing?
Well, I was working at Olin Chemical in Saltville, Virginia.
Right.
And they gave me a lifetime job. They moved my furniture down here. They put me up in a hotel until I found a house. Houses were hard to find, and I moved my family in Kingsport, her people's, and until I found a house, and I lived in a hotel. They paid it. Packed my lunch, you know, and to go to work, and moved my furniture, and that was a pretty good little amount. I had it stored in Kingsport. So I played maybe a couple, 3 years. Then we ended up playing, the league broke up, and we played like Magnavox. They had an independent team. They had guys like, they had a good ball team. They had guys like Rance Pless. Mm-hmm. Rance Pless played the majors.
Yes, sir.
They had Bromley Green, a fella that I had at Kingsport. He was managing. They had this Jim Constable, left-hand pitcher.
You know, people today, because it's gone, people don't know how good those semi-pro leagues were.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was a boy in High Point in the 30s. They had great semi-pro leagues.
Yeah.
Great semi-pro ball.
They had this Jim Constable, left-hander, you know, pitched for Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And I faced him when Wilhelm was at Knoxville back years ago. And that Jim Constable was rough. He didn't have no curveball, but, buddy, he had a ball that moved in on your fist with something on it. And you had to be a bushy, good blue-eyed and bushy-tailed to hang in there. There's no corralling around when those guys pitch, especially Constable. I used to say in Knoxville, we'd be out crowding around, and like on a Sunday, you know, and you try to eat a bite or two, get out there all groggy, say, "Yeah, just about, I figure there's that Constable, Wilhelm, either one of them will do." You know, that's the time you don't want to see them kind of people. That Wilhelm, he had I don't know how he had it after he got to the big leagues, but my God, he'd throw it, a left-hand hitter. He'd throw that thing anytime. He'd throw it 3-1, 2-0.
Yeah,
yeah, he'd throw it.
Yeah.
And of course, you walked a lot on him, yeah. But But there's very seldom that ball could jump. That ball go clear down there. And I mean right now, it wasn't no grass like a curveball. But that thing come up there. Well, we had it when I was at Columbia. Gerald Walker was manager.
Yeah.
You remember Gerald?
Yeah,
called him G. Walker.
G. Walker, right, yeah.
We had that Cincinnati ball club down there that year. See, I got drafted by Cincinnati after I hit the home runs at Reedsville. And I'm asking this flag farm director, why'd you draft me for? Why in the world? He said, well, this is a business. We figure you can help this ball club or we wouldn't have drafted you. And which is, he's right. So went down there and hell, they had Johnny Temple. We had a pitcher, the name of Carroll, had a knuckleball that they had to wear a mask when they warmed him up. Oh boy. Had old Bob Hazel and Bob Neiman. You remember Bob Neiman?
Yeah, I sure do.
Bob Hazel, he went up, he didn't stay long. He was, we worked.
Hurricane Hazel, he came up right after the hurricane. And
we worked, Gerald Walker worked with him, and G put me, he told those ball players when I came there, I had been with the Tulsa ball club, because Earl York wouldn't sign, and when Earl signed, then they sent me where I was supposed to be. And in the meantime, I had signed a contract with both clubs in order to get the amount of money I was going to receive. Tulsa paid me half, and Columbia paid me half. They only wanted to pay me half.
Well, in those days, they had a ceiling on it anyway.
Yeah,
wasn't that sort of thing?
Like Cincinnati Flag said, we had a big fight over the telephone. I kept tearing contracts up, and he said, you're used to being paid under the table, and we don't do that in this organization. And I said, well, I don't care. I said, you don't, I said, you're not, now, buttering me up here now, like they used to do. I said, because I've got to make a dollar the best way I can. And I said, I've got to make it now. I said, you can't give me a cut to come down here. I'm not so anxious to come down here because it's a good league, you know. And so finally we come to that agreement.
So he didn't call a pen under the table, but he was.
In other words, he was.
Yeah.
And but now there was another thing. I really enjoyed playing there. Walker told those guys, he said, now this boy's played ball. And he just had a young guy down there helping him. And he said, this guy's been around. Muscle's been around. He said, when he tells you guys, you listen. He said, don't think he's just another one of the ball players. He said, you listen. Well, they did. They was a good bunch of boys. And if I saw something, and we had this Hazel, my God, he, right or left, he'd start running for that dugout. And he'd just kind of throw his bat at it and run. And Walker, he got down under the batting cage. We worked out there in the morning. And he'd hold that foot, and I said, gee, you're going to get killed. I said, he's going to get a good pitch and forget about you, and he's going to just take your head off.
You mean he's holding
his foot? He's holding his foot down. And so finally, one day, see, he was dedicated to that organization. So one day, the groundkeeper, clubhouse man, suggested we take a 2x4 and notch it out and bolt it and spike it, put his foot down in and turn it. And boy, that was perfect. He just lifted his foot that high, and he couldn't run then. He just lifted that high and tried to use that on him. And the same time, we had a left-handed pitcher named Blackbird. He gave $60,000 to sign. He could throw hard, but oh, he was the wildest that you ever saw. So Walker had instructions to start him every fourth day, just like he was pitching. And then he'd hit two in the hind end. He'd walk two. Then the guy get a base hit. Then he'd hit another in the hind end. Well, they just had to take him out, you know, then start him again. He went like that all. It was disgusting all year. And we had a good ball club. Yeah, we won a lot of ball games.
Yeah.
And
did you tell them the truth about how?
Oh, my God.
We were talking about hitting. Did anybody ever teach you to hit? Did anybody ever give you any coaching when you were in high school or after you got into pros?
No, no. I can remember asking G one time. G was working on different guys and saying, "Hey, boy, you're striding too much," or "Hey, your timing's off, this, that, you're swinging late, and this and that." But I wasn't hitting. When I first joined the Columbia Ball Club, I was doing what? Hitting up. Wasn't hitting the ball. And all at once, I broke loose, just like he said. And what I said to him, I said, "Gee, how come we're helping all these other guys?" I said, "Hell, I'm in this ball club, too." I said, "What's wrong with me?" He said, "Muslim, if you ever hit, you'll hit." I'll never forget that. He said, "If you ever hit, you'll hit." Said, how do you feel?" I said, "Oh, I feel all right, but what am I doing wrong?" He said, "You'll hit if you ever hit." So I did. I started hitting.
Well, where'd you learn picking up a rotation on a curveball, for example, and knowing a curve from a fastball?
Well,
where'd you learn that?
My theory, I've always been, this theory of hitting, has always been you hit the fastball. Now, if you want to hit that pitch to left field and it's out there, go ahead. If you want to, and if you're in other words, you're watching that ball all the way into the catcher's mitt. Are you ready for the fastball? Here it comes. All right, just as soon as you see that break, you're ready for the fastball? Well, you drop your bat in on it. You drop your bat in on the fastball. But it's not as fast as a fastball, so the consequences is you're bound to pull it. Mm-hmm. If this guy is really fast, you might be hitting it out there. But that curveball, you'll probably be hitting foul.
But you're like most good hitters I ever talked to that say you look for the fastball.
Look for the fastball, yeah.
And then you're ready for the curve.
Yeah, well, you take a left-handed hitter who's got the advantage of a right-handed hitter.
Oh, yeah.
Because more right-handed pitchers.
Sure.
So you've got the stuff. Now, when it comes to left-handed pitching, you can't ask me too much about that because I never guessed right in my life. I've tried guessing on them. You know, say, I'll guess. And about that time, right in under there. And I never could guess. And of course, it's nice if you can guess and you guess right. My God, it's just a hanging right there. It's just right there it is. Hell, just go ahead and hit it. You see it clear out there.
You were talking about them throwing under your chin and so forth. Did they brush you back much?
Yeah. I was very fortunate. I've been hit everywhere, I guess.
And you played before they had helmets, too.
Oh, yeah. But I was never hit in the head. And I've seen so many of them hit in the head. And you see where the disadvantage was to me. You had these fellas that went on, that I played with. They went to the major leagues. And along that same pitcher that they hit against, he went also. He moved up, mm-hmm. And he went to the major. So he got his control. Well, then here I come, and I come right in with that guy that's learning his control. He's still got that whip, but he hadn't got his control. So it's harder for me to hit than it is for that guy there. They say, well, he went up there in that Triple-A. He went up in that Triple-A. Well, he went up in the Triple-A. That same pitcher, at least you get it over, see? Yeah. He might be a pitching him a little differently. He might be maybe he won't get as good a pitch. Every now and then, these wild pitchers, you will get a pitch. But there'll be a lot of times you won't get a pitch, too. That's always the way I figured it.
Who are the better hitters you ever saw besides yourself?
Well,
I asked Dick Sisler that one time. You know Dick Sisler? He was batting coach, and I said, "Who's the best hitter you ever saw besides your daddy?" He says, "Ted Williams." How's that for an answer? I said, "That's a pretty good answer." Yeah, I tell you what, so who are the better hitters you saw?
I swear, there's been a lot of good hitters, but I've seen a lot of I've seen a lot of good hitters that never went anywhere.
That's right.
Frankie Slavany. Frankie Slavany. He hit for Butler in the first year I played. He had a little like these, with those hips, like a golf player. And I mean, when he come around with those hips, Frankie Slavany. And he was played for Butler Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And Hank Sauer. Well, Hank Sauer hit a home run off of me, that son of a gun. They put me in the pitch up at Manassas. And Hank was playing first base for Butler. He played with Philadelphia. Hank Sauer. Big guy.
Played with the Cubs, I believe.
Cubs, yeah. Well,
and maybe two or three other people. I don't know. But,
big old Hank, we was playing in Monessen, I could always throw hard. I had a good arm. I had a terrific arm.
You did.
I used to pitch back. And in fact, I pitched and played first base in this when I quit school and got this job because I could hit the ball in right field over the automobiles parked down there. So they put me on first base and then went, and I'd pitch also because I could throw hard, you know. And that was when this Brooklyn fella came up there, you know, and wanted me to go up to Dayton.
Uh-huh.
And Dick Hobbitzel, he played first base for Cincinnati. Dick Hobbitzel,
yeah.
You remember?
Oh, yeah.
So Dick said, lay off that Brooklyn guy. I said, that's a bad organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be one of the better organizations. So he said, I'll get you out. And I never saw him.
What are you talking about? Organizations, and you're talking about getting $100 a month and so forth. What kind of money were you making in Reedsville in 49?
Eight.
$800.
Yeah.
$800 a month?
Yeah.
Great, Dan.
But that's only $4,800 a year.
Well, yeah, but they were paying you under the table,
yeah,
too.
Oh,
They didn't have any ball players like that. Mm. Yeah, how about meal money?
Some sign tickets.
Uh-huh.
Like in the Texas Arizona League, this millionaire, we'd go to El Paso and we'd sign tickets. And, Lord, we ate like a king, you know. But then they give, you know, like $5, $7.50 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I can remember, this is a funny little story. I joined this Tulsa ball club in Alexandria, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Earl York wouldn't sign. So I had signed a contract with them, so they told me to fly down there. And in other words, they was wanting to tantalize the guy, you know. So we stayed at the hotel and we ate at this restaurant across from the hotel. So I joined these boys at the table for dinner, and there was a guy, Mo Cervansky, left-hand pitcher, pitched for Cincinnati later. Well, I ordered a sirloin steak. He signed tickets, you know. And these other two boys, they ordered. But this Mo said, hey, Munchell said, hell, get to that porterhouse. He said, I'm getting a porterhouse, and I'm getting a double order of strawberries with this whipped cream and that big shrimp cocktail. Said, I like that big shrimp cocktail. He said, get you. He said, so I said, oh, this enough. I'm not that hungry. So they embarrassed these other fellas. So anyway, after the, I went back to Columbia. And then a while later, Mo came back. So I don't know whether Neiman, it might have been Bob Neiman, had told about Mo being so daggone tight when we broke camp in Alexandria. They gave us $50 until we got to Tulsa. $50 meal. You had to spend your own then.
Mm-hmm.
So we stopped to coke up. We'd coke up at a little place, you know, and most of us guys would order a plate lunch. You know, they had something on special. We'd order French fries and this and that. This Mo got over in a corner. This Mo's man, he said, give me a cheeseburger and a big orange. Yeah, big orange. And we're sitting there eating the meal there. It cost us maybe $2.50. And he was eating that 75-cent hamburger with a 10-cent pop, you know. Well, anyway, he done that all the way to Memphis. We got to Memphis. And that's when I, York signed, and I caught a train back to Columbia. And somebody had told that on Mo about how tight he was about the cheeseburgers. He always accused me of telling that.
he was eating porterhouse steaks all in the ball
game. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they fed good, there's no doubt to it. And so when you sign those tickets, boys, that's pretty good. And you take it to Albuquerque. Now, we'd have room service and everything. Charge it.
My goodness.
Oh, yeah. Get bacon tomato sandwich, pitcher. One guy ordered a pitcher of warm milk. Those guys from Long Beach, California, I think. Oh, they get about a half and send up Monk. What was his name? Monk. He's a catcher. Send me up a pitcher of warm milk. And he said, what? I said, send me up a pitcher of warm milk. You know, stuff like that. Just for warning us, you know. And we signed checks, but it didn't make any difference. But I'll tell you what, Charlie. People ask me, they say, why did you want to fool around there like that? 16 years, every spring, going to spring training. Hell, I enjoy it. I enjoy getting there.
Right.
And the going with so many ball clubs, being traded, that's a great experience. Hell, it makes a fella grow up. You realize what you learned, different people. You learn a lot of stuff in an experience like that, and it's a lot of fun.
Sure,
I tell you, you have a lot of fun. Of course, man, the money that they're paying now, my God, a man ought to. You talk about this dope and stuff. My God, what they ought to do is stay clear away from everything. Oh, my man. God, it's the money they're paying now is better than going to 5 years of college.
Sure it is.
My
sure
God, is. Keep your nose clean, boy. You sure don't want to play around any. This nightclub is all over. If you want to do a little of that, do it after the season's over. But right while that season's on, and don't overdo it. Don't get fat. Now, I've known ball players that got fat. In fact, this boy, they gave $60,000, this left-hand pitcher. Mm-hmm. They tried to harness him. They didn't have this thing in Florida where they take him down, you know, and try to teach him.
Instruction
camp. You just had to learn it there. So he was during the Korean War. He got drafted, and he come back out, and they said he was all bloated up. And they gave up on him. I haven't heard, don't know whatever happened. Jerry Blackburn, awful good old boy.
Have you got your complete minor league record anywhere? Year by year? I bet you haven't. I'm going to see if I can't find it for you. Can you remember all the ball clubs you played for?
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you what, hang on a minute. I'm going to, where'd you start and what year?
Monessen in 1937. Monessen Cardinals.
Remember what league that was?
Penn State League.
Okay.
Penn State Association.
Right. And then 38?
38, New Iberia, Albuquerque.
Yeah.
New Iberia, Albuquerque. There's something else I'd like to tell you here.
Tell me.
All right. You know, when Ricky was getting me to go to New Iberia and I was balking, I told him mosquitoes would eat me up down there. And Benny Borgman, he wanted me. He wanted Eddie Zippe.
Yeah.
He wanted Eddie Zippe. And Eddie had hit, he'd hit more than I did at Ohio State League or something.
Faustoria,
that's right. Eddie Zippe.
I remember. He led the minor leagues in hitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he couldn't pull. And Borgman liked me because I could pull. He was one of these year kind of a. He's one of these kind of, you know, like that.
Punch hitter, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Borgman didn't like that. Borgman kind of edged me on. He said, hell, you don't have to go. You don't have to go. He said, tell him them damn mosquitoes will eat you up down there. And then they got in touch with Ricky, and Ricky said, hold up, boy, I'll handle it. So while we was sitting back there at the desk, and he was calling Gennaro at New Iberia, giving me the $50 raise, he said, I can handle it. Pop Kelsner come up the steps about that time. You remember Pop Kelsner?
Don't know him, no.
All right, Pop Kelsner was supposed to have been the one assigned as a dean, but George Stone tells me he wasn't. I was with the understanding that the old Dutchman was. He was old. He come up and he looked back and he said, oh, Mr. Ricky, he said, you trade dizzy. They had traded him for $180,000 to Chicago Cubs. Mm-hmm. And he said, why you trade Ricky, dizzy? Ricky said, Pop, don't worry. No more. He said, it's all gone. It's all gone. So he looked over me and he says, Scholes, you don't hear what's going on here because this is not out yet, the press. And I said, okay, I don't, it's none of my business.
But Dizzy's arm was gone.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it sure was.
And so Pop says, ooh, Mr. Ricky, are you sure? Oh, he hated that, you know. So then about the next week, they didn't do it right then. About the next week, then the headlines come out. Dizzy Dean traded the Chicago Cubs for $180,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew about it a week before, but I didn't say nothing about it. So I just put that in. I just happened to
think
that.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you remember that. 39. Where were you in 39?
39, Johnson City,
right.
Appalachia. That was after the... Your manager's in jeopardy. If you take this guy, you can't handle him. So then Ollie Vanney, Heine Mueller told me that Ollie had guts enough to take me. 1940, then I was traded to Bobby Goff at Texas, Arizona. No, wait a minute. Yeah, Texas, Arizona League. No, wait a minute. No, East Texas League.
What club?
Tyler, Texas.
Okay.
Bobby Goff.
41.
In 41, and I was, let's see, that was 1940, wasn't it?
When did you go into service? You were in the service, right?
Yeah, I went in 41.
Yeah.
Then in 40, and then...
Did you play any in 41, or did you...
I got on 40, at the end of the season of 40, I was traded to El Dorado, Guy Sturdy. Joined him in Hot Springs, Arkansas. He was on the road, 1940, end of the season. Then in 41, I went to El Dorado, Guy Sturdy. Now that was a darn good league, boy. There was a... You know who they? There was Merv Connor hit 400 home runs.
Yeah.
Merv, the boys, I'll tell you what, he could drink that much, and I swear he'd go wild. He was a damn guy, couldn't drink a lick.
Huh.
And he played for Texas County. We used to go there and go up and play poker, play old Merv and all of it. And the first thing you know, he'd take one too many, and the first thing you know, hell, he was like that. And he's bad about fighting, too. He went up to Chicago White Sox and hit three or four home runs, or something.
He had three home runs in one game, he sure did.
Yeah, right? And he was a big old raw bone guy.
You sounded like, did you socialize with the ball players on the other clubs off the field?
Yeah.
I mean,
I had friends in me.
Well, I'm not talking, not just you, but ball players in that era, in the 40s. Did they have friends on other ball clubs, on ball clubs they were playing against?
Oh, yeah. Lord, yeah. You see, I had good friends. I had friends that played hard against me well, like Teapot Fry.
Right, yeah.
But he was a good friend of mine. I always liked Teapot. And then when I was at Charlotte or Spartanburg, there was a, they got in this left-hander Davison. You remember that he was going to be the Bob left-handed Bob Feller?
Billy Joe Davison.
Billy Joe Davison.
North Carolina, yes,
had
sir.
Had one of the best.
Yes, sir.
Had one of the best.
Right.
He lost his fastball. But every now and then he could throw it. But he had one of the darndest curveballs that ever I saw. And they gave him a big bonus.
They gave him a big bonus.
Yeah, they gave him a big bonus. And I remember they used to call him Bags, you know. And he had a leopard skin in his car, seat cover.
Bags for money bags.
Yeah, yeah, money bag. So they'd bang him around pretty bad. And they had, Spartanburg had this year, hell, hit all those home runs for Detroit, made become a star. Well, he's striking out down there. Oh my God, he was pitiful. Well, I had a friend, Doc Bowden, played second base for about 3 years.